B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Friday, March 22nd, 2019, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on CBS Sports Radio 1300 in Baltimore, as well as the Ticket 1230 in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll check in with Joe over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get a gaming news update, plus the Video Game Hall of Fame has announced this year's nominees. Those discussions are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But joining us now is one of the most well-known voices in League of Legends.
A legend.
He's been calling League events since Season 1 championships in Sweden and recently lent his voice to an episode of The Simpsons, David Freak Turley. Welcome to Checkpoint XP.
Excited to be here.
So you were cast on an episode of The Simpsons that recently featured esports. You know, what was that experience like, and how do you feel The Simpsons captured the esports scene in that episode?
I was honestly pretty pleasantly surprised. I have seen a lot of shows, whether trying to be comedic or serious, try to capture esports, and almost invariably they get it quite wrong. There's very few that do it well, and usually that's like people who are gamers then made a show. I thought Simpsons did a really, really good job, especially in comparison to most things out there. Most obvious to me was the Homer talking to Bart in the bath, and he's like, just wait, they pay you to play video games? Yeah. Real money? Yes. $1,000. Of real money? Yes. Of dollars? Yes. To play video games? Yes. And it just goes on and on and on. The next scene starts with
something
him, again,
that,
not getting it.
A question that we have all had to live, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. At one point or another, yeah.
I'm fortunate that my parents know computers quite well, especially my dad. So they didn't know esports, but they're very aware of like how much like computers matter and how much technology exists and times change because of it. So it's been a bit less difficult for me than I assume most other people. And I've spent most of my adult life now at this point having a full-time job working in gaming. So I'm like, I work a video game company. Like, oh, okay, people understand video games.
So you just mentioned your dad. Was that your sort of introduction to the world of video games? Was through your folks, or how did that happen?
I think so, yeah. I'm thinking back, you know, a good 26 or 7 or whatever years to when I first started playing games. And I remember reading an article in, I don't know what magazine it was, but they were covering, I'm pretty sure actually filling in details after the fact, Thresh's win of like the first Quake championship where he won a Ferrari. And the article sort of went like, hey, you know, these things happened. And then the ultimate take was like, but this is really, really stupid. Professional gaming is dumb. And then the last sentence he wrote was, but daddy's got a Ferrari to win. And it's like, okay, so I'm confused what you're trying to say here, but all right, sure. And then in my like early-ish teens, StarCraft came out and like it was getting played in South Korea a lot. And this is well before YouTube or sort of any streaming software is really out there. But sort of catching up on the fact that, oh, there actually are pro games of StarCraft. That's pretty cool. And just sort of getting into competitive games in general. Yeah, getting introduced to PC games absolutely came through my dad, who is like was and still big into PCs. But yeah, the desire to be sort of competitive and play in esports just... it was sort of the right age for me to want to compete in stuff. And I got into games that ended up having pro scenes. And so I just kind of kept trying.
So going back to The Simpsons for just a second, now that, you know, The Simpsons has done it, I know, do you think that this will kind of open the floodgates for other mainstream TV shows or, you know, mainstream media outlets to kind of cover esports in a little bit more earnest fashion?
I think it's something that it certainly helps. It certainly contributes. To me, the idea of esports becoming mainstream is going to come from a million different angles. It's even things like Ninja hosting New Year's Eve, where gaming personalities are real celebrities who do, you know, quote unquote, there's quotes over in where I'm sitting, I'm quoting myself. I'm air quoting like, yeah, they're now real celebrities. They're real famous people. They go to do real things. You know, Simpsons covers esports. They're like a real show in that regard. And this is going to happen from a million different angles. It's going to be non-gaming sponsors sponsoring esports events like LCS or LEC or Worlds. It's You know, every other esport doing the same thing, and it's all going to happen kind of together. And yeah, it's going to keep happening because clearly esports is growing. Clearly esports is here to stay. And once people realize that, they'll catch up. But that's just going to happen. And it's nice that, you know, there's one extra data point of, okay, now the Simpsons have done it. So that's one little extra push forward.
So turning our attention to what's going on in League of Legends right now. In the spring split, a team made the playoffs despite having a less than 500 record. Do you think that maybe only four teams should go to the playoffs, or that, you know, maybe they need to do something to combat something like that from happening? Or is this for the better?
I actually think it's for the better. I actually really do like more teams making it. I remember a long time back, TSM won a split, or maybe they made finals, one of the two, where they were the sixth seed coming in. I think back to the literal very, very first LCS season, Good Game University made finals from, I think it was also six, from the last allowable spot, and that was 6 out of 8 teams. So their record was really bad, as opposed to 6 out of 10. So, no, I think it's actually good that well over half the teams get a shot at the postseason. You play a long enough season to know, okay, who's really not worth the cut? And hey, who really deserves to get an extra benefit, such as a bye for Team Liquid and Cloud9? And it's okay to have like 3 through 6 in the quarterfinal. Both those teams are pretty solid, especially when you kind of look at how this split turned out. Like, a lot of those teams are very, very close in skill, and it would feel kind of bad cutting off number 5, where it feels like they probably deserve to make it. So on the feel side, I like that, you know, more than half make it. And then even just on a, like, a very businessy end, I think it's always good for more teams to get exposure and for more games to be played in general, to have a lot of coverage in the league. So all in all, I'm pretty happy with 6 out of 10. I wouldn't be terribly opposed to somehow increasing that to, like, 7 or 8, especially if the league ever improves or increases to like 12 teams. Mm-hmm. I think it's good to have over half.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're sitting down with League of Legends caster David Freak Turley.
You've been involved with professional League of Legends scene for a very, very long time. In fact, it's joked that Season 1 World Championship was held in your basement. What's it been like to watch the pro league scene grow over the last decade?
It's been really fun and really heartening. Like I answered earlier about how esports coming mainstream is sort of a slow trickle and it's getting pushed in from all angles. That's how it felt for me covering esports for League of Legends. Again, my starts were playing games with very, very small scenes where because some tournament organizer dropped the ball, there was a vote for who would go to a tournament, and I didn't win the vote, even though I was the second best player in my country at the time. So, like, I've seen it all from way back when. League of Legends never really quite had that. Yeah, it went from the Season 1 World Championship being hosted in Yanchepin at DreamHack to Season 2. We actually rented out our own venue in 2013, an even bigger venue. And then around 2013, LCS starts. That's a really big deal. And it's just sort of growing and growing. It's nothing but cool and really awesome seeing sponsors coming in, seeing really serious team owners who are building their business around, you know, marketing their players and building their brand as a team and making sure that, like, there's good actors in this space as well. I think that's been a really positive thing recently that I think franchising has helped quite a lot. Is it makes sure your team owners are actually good people in it for the long term, in it for the health of the entire industry. So overall, it's just been incredibly awesome. Again, just from all angles, things have gotten better, and that's great to see.
So last year's World Finals featured a Chinese team and a European team. Do you think that was just kind of a one-off that a South Korean team didn't make it? Or do you see that as a sign that on kind of like a global level that the skill gap is starting to close?
Yeah, the meme about the gap is closing certainly, I think, has been true for a while. I really do think more often than not that the skill levels get closer year over year. Certainly the LPL with Invictus Gaming and Royal Never Give Up, who are the world and then midseason invitational champions this past year, were deserving of those titles. They were definitely the best teams at the time and put out the best performances. I do think some of it also is the game changes slightly, where overall vision has been cut down and aggression has been rewarded more in League of Legends for the last couple of seasons now. And the typical, to paint with overly too broad of a brush, the typical South Korean strategy was very slow, very methodical, very vision-based. And the typical Chinese strategy was very aggressive, very in-your-face, let's take fights. As long as the odds are in our favor, it's worth taking the risk. Hmm. And that play style has been pushed toward slowly but surely over the last several years. And so it's kind of unsurprising that last year was the first time that the LPL, that the Chinese Pro League, won a world championship. I think the game suits it. I think their player skill is quite good as well. And this is going to be an interesting year because this is the first time where maybe South Korea is not the favorite. And as we head towards mid-season Invitational in early May, the test is going to be, does SKT or Griffin or whomever, you know, can they even handle now teams like G2 or Fnatic or Invictus or FunPlus or any of these other really aggressive early game teams who have been shown that they can be quite good, can compete on Worlds, make things like Finals. And it'll be another clash of styles.
Well, I think we know that Team Liquid's finally going to get it done this year, right? I mean,
yes,
they couldn't lose again. Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the all-time memorable League of Legends moments was the Urfitational April Fool's special that was held a few years ago. I just have to know, for me, how did that come about? Like, what was that process like?
It was basically hearing a couple months out, hey, we're going to do a for fun show match, and it's going to be overly serious but comically so, and we're all going to pretend we're very pompous, like it's you know, the next big thing, and yet it's very clear from you know, anyone watching that it's clearly a very, very silly thing. And just let's go be over the top, let's go write in as many jokes as we can, what kind of skits can you think of, what kind of stupid stuff can we do, and we're all pretty much about it. So you know, a couple months down the line, we've written out what we're going to do, and we cover the game, and it was a blast.
Was it your idea to be introduced as just Freak in the giant chair?
Oh, I actually don't even remember anymore any of the planning stuff, but I am glad I did have a giant chair.
So looking ahead a little bit to the future, what do you think League of Legends needs to do this, you know, grow and stay as relevant as Battle Royale games continue to gain popularity and games like Overwatch, which continue to grow and put down a really, really strong infrastructure and foundation for esports?
Sure. I mean, so I have two thoughts on that. One is, I think in general, there's still some level of unspoken alliance among the esports, because we want the scene to grow, we want the scene to get bigger, we want people to take notice, right, it becoming mainstream and whatnot. So I'm generally pretty happy if, you know, another esport comes in and knocks out of the park and makes a really good event and makes some headlines. Now, of course, we want those headlines for League of Legends as well, and those kinds of things have happened. Here I am on the radio right now, you know, we had The Simpsons, of course, just not long ago. Like, those kinds of things, I think, benefit all the esports, not just ours or not just theirs. So that's the first thing. On the other part of it, as far as what League needs to do specifically, I mean, I think we just sort of need to stay at the forefront of what's going on, right? As more interest from sponsors shows up, we've got to make sure that we're there to sign those deals, and not just on the monetary perspective, but oftentimes a good partner will actually provide things for the fans or for the players that, like, they're uniquely positioned to do well. And so, it, you know, that's always a good two-way street if you can have that happen. And so, you know, business development, of course, is certainly relevant. It's making sure that we keep up with our fans and with our players. I think League as a game is here to stay. It's still hugely popular, and it's still the most played online PC game in the world. And that of course requires that our game designers and everyone else are doing good things that resonate with our players. And so that's, you know, it's to the earlier point I keep saying, it's really coming in from all fronts. It's making sure that you're crossing all the T's, you're dotting all the I's, you're still making a really good game that people want to play, making a really good spectator experience that people want to watch, and promoting these players to sort of promote this fandom so that you'll follow Doublelift around for, you know, the next decade of his career.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're sitting down with League of Legends caster Freak.
If you weren't a League caster, just out of curiosity, you know, had the planets aligned in some other way, what do you think you'd be doing instead? Would it still be casting some other game or something entirely different?
Working at your uncle's tile store?
Yeah, so I definitely knew for a while I wanted to work in gaming. While I was in college and I was studying economics and I got kind of close to graduating but didn't, I knew I wanted to work in gaming. One of the big ones I wanted to do was game design. In fact, there were two internships that were open at Riot when I applied. One was for a game design internship. One was for a community internship. And the game design one actually wasn't open for the next like 3 months. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll come in with the community internship. And then I'll like try to transfer maybe. And I'll try to do game design at Riot or somewhere else if Riot wasn't going to have me. You know, that was going to be kind of the first goal. And in fact, while I was still interning at Riot and transitioning to full time a bit later on, I got actually a job offer from another friend of mine who worked at a different gaming company who offered me a game design position. And I chose to stay at Riot, and I'm glad I did. I think everything surrounding what I've done has been really awesome, and it's all been really great experiences. So, you know, broadly, certainly I would want to work in gaming. As far as a very specific skill set, I would like to learn to do game design, and maybe some point down the line I'll try to change careers, but I don't know if that will happen or if it's really what I want to do. Otherwise, yeah, I love what I'm doing as well with commentary, and essentially I kind of consider it sharing my enthusiasm for games with other people, and whether that's casting other esports, whether it's being a streamer, whether it's making you know, a YouTube channel or some other kind of content. Like, those are things that I really like, is being excited about games, sharing that passion with other people, and telling everyone who will listen.
So now that, you know, esports has started to grow and expand into its own industry, what kind of advice would you give to someone who's kind of looking at League of Legends as either a potential career path or a path to college?
As far as trying to work in gaming, working in esports, or even more specific job, so I don't know for sure anymore how good college like major tracks are for a lot of gaming stuff. Like if you want to be an artist and you want to learn how to paint, like cool. Like that book has been written on how to learn how to draw very well and emulate art styles and be an artist. And there's a lot of skills like that where the skill has been around for a long time, so the way to do it is known. For things like shoutcasting or esports event production or game design being another example, those are such young positions. There's not a really great school-based track for that. It feels like most people who work in esports that I meet, they weren't esports majors. Not like there was one, but and there kind of still isn't. So it's about learning the skills that you can use and getting your name out there as well. Like my path to becoming a shoutcaster was working at Warcraft 3 fan sites as a volunteer for about half a decade and putting out my own content and learning, you know, how to share my excitement for games. That became me getting hired to do champion spotlights, not even shoutcasting, but for a community internship to produce video content. And then because Riot decided, yes, we want to make the LCS in 2013, and we want full-time shoutcasters and full-time players. Okay, well, thankfully, I already had the experience of shoutcasting on my own time, not as a title position, as a volunteer for a fan site. And that sort of idea of, I don't know if it's paying your dues, but simply just getting reps. I think there is never a shortage of free work to do in the esports scene. And that sounds kind of shoddy. I understand that. Free work never really sounds like a great thing on the outside looking in. But also, how else are you going to learn the skills? No one's going to hire an event producer who's never been at an event before and pay them for it. Instead, you're going to have to like assist someone who does this or go to these conventions or maybe run your own booth at PAX one time or something. But you take these baby steps to actually learn the skill set that you can then actually apply where someone will hire you.
Freak has been our guest here on Checkpoint XP. Freak, man, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again to Freak for his time. You can follow him on Twitter at RiotFreak and, of course, catch him every week in the LCS. Still ahead here on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll debate this year's nominees for the Video Game Hall of Fame. That discussion will wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, we'll check in with Joe over at the Checkpoint News Desk.
Apex Legends had an amazing first month, but just how amazing?
Gaming news is next here on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. I want to thank everyone listening on the Talk of Las Vegas, 101.5 FM and 720 AM, as well as KJR 950 in Seattle, Washington. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, the nominees for this year's Video Game Hall of Fame have been revealed. While it's not nearly as prestigious as the Checkpoint XP High Score Hall of Fame, by the way, you can vote for the winner of Best Villain over at our website, CheckpointXP.com. We still need to take a look at this year's nominees. But first, let's check in with Joe over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get a gaming news update.
Gaming News Update with Joe Sloan.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you important news.
CheckpointXP.com.
Apex Legends had a stellar launch by just about any metric. In addition to earning over 50 million players by the end of its first month, the game brought in an estimated $92 million. That earns the title of best launch month of any free-to-play game in history.
Ballin'.
I'm not impressed.
I'm impressed with $92 million.
No, I'm not. Fortnite, does Fortnite even count considering it's still quote unquote early access.
Yeah.
Well, we're also well past launch month.
What was its technical launch? Do they consider launch of Battle Royale mode launch, or do they consider
retail?
Well, it's never retail.
Well, it's never retail.
Yeah.
Or it's even when it first came out, it
splash screens
launch.
If you believe it's splash screens, technically it's still not released yet. It's still early access. So I'm very confused how that's being judged.
The FTC even allow that to happen? Straight up.
I have no idea.
I don't even have the slightest idea. But, I mean, listen, that's great and all, but I mean, I don't know. I still don't understand the appeal of Apex. The couple rounds that I've played, it's just not that appealing.
You got 92 million reasons to disagree with you.
That's fine. 92. Yeah, 92. You know, they say 92 million people can't be wrong, but yes, they can.
Well, you would think that it would be eating into Fortnite's numbers, but not so, according to Epic CEO Tim Sweeney. According to him, they hit a non-event peak for Fortnite twice since Apex released. He said, quote, "What Apex Legends has done is re-energized a lot of shooter players, people who come in and out of shooters depending on what's popular. Instead of taking players away from Fortnite, we've actually gained in Apex Legends worth of new players. We're very close to hitting the 250 million player point."
I think there's a grain of truth to that.
Yeah, because you're certainly not going to come out and go, yeah, because of Apex, our player base is down by half. Sure.
Yeah, but they also have four times the amount of platform availability that Apex does.
Exactly.
So, I mean, on the one hand, yeah, they might be right. Like, if they're counting Fortnite Mobile as, parts of those numbers, which they can.
Yeah, reasonable.
I don't know, man. It seems a little bit suspect.
Robbie and Norris were given a reminder of why it's important to actually play the games last night when the Seoul Dynasty shocked the world. They stunned the New York Excelsior, defeating them 3-1. Meanwhile, the Vancouver Titans defeated the Uprising 3-0.
Hang on. Yes, I need to know what happened, because we sat here. Well, I should take this back. We sat here. You, Norris, and you, Robbie, sat here and said, Seoul's going to get eaten alive. This is a foregone conclusion.
And what happened?
First of all, every Joe has his day. Let me put that out.
That is very true. But what happened is Seoul came out in the very first match and had a completely different lineup. They literally put out, was it five different players that
people
didn't
were
usually
calling
play.
Them? People were calling them the B squad.
Yeah.
Wow. The B squad needs to be the A squad.
That's a hell of a B squad.
But here's what happened: it completely took NYXL off guard because they're a very defensive team, and Seoul was more defensive.
Yeah, and on the second map, they brought their A squad back out. And I mean, dude, they just got into New York's head and they did not leave.
Yeah, well, even 3-1 wasn't really an accurate representation. Seoul pretty much ran away with it.
But we saw this, listen, we saw this kind of performance in the finals last year, or the lead up to the finals last year, where NYXL was predicted to go all the way to the finals and then ended up getting upset in the quarterfinals. Like, is this just what this team does? They go out there and in big moments, they choke.
They are making they're making the reputation for themselves as that. For
that's too bad.
It's a good reminder, though, that that's why when you look at matchups, you don't just say, yep, one's going to beat eight every time. It never works that way. There's going to be upsets.
That's true. I mean, did we get caster desk analysis? Did they have predictions?
Everyone said New York.
Literally no one. And Fisher said in an interview, not even he believed they were going to beat NYXL.
Wow.
Wow. Viewership in League of Legends is all over the place right now. While the LEC region is continuing to experience strong growth in viewership, the LCS has found its viewership stagnating a bit. It's not too surprising given the way the LCS is shaping up, with C9 and Liquid dominant, while pretty much everyone else is in that middle pack. Meanwhile, in the LEC, there's a lot of Dark Horse contenders and strong play going on.
Well, and, where are all of these MOBA viewers going? Are they going to a different MOBA?
Are they watching the LEC? Because on Saturday, at least, they both are playing.
No, but I think a lot of it was happening is that, people who would normally be watching the LCS are moving over to watch the LEC, because the LEC is more dramatic right now. They performed very well at Worlds. The international stature of LEC, I think, is raising, and LCS is perpetual underperformer.
Dota 2 is also back in action right now,
that's
so I'm sure Dota 2 might be pulling some of it.
That's
fair.
Nissan has become the latest non-endemic brand to enter the esports space. The Japanese auto manufacturer has inked a partnership with Optic Gaming and FaZe Clan. They'll act as a jersey sponsor for both organizations, and players from the teams will have access to Nissan vehicles for branded content across social media. At this point, most major automotive companies have at least tested the water on esports.
This is very impressive. Just the statistic that most automotive companies have tested the waters with esports.
The major ones, anyway. Ford, yeah. GM, a lot of them have at least
They need to
done
because
something.
Millennials don't buy cars.
Well, that's very
can't
true.
Can't afford cars.
Well, that's becoming less true.
Nah, it's not as bad as it was.
No, it's not. But, I mean, yes, we are the generation that has facilitated things like Uber. You know, we have, and not
Bike
the Caster,
lanes.
Not the Caster, the driving app.
ride sharing in general.
Ride sharing in general, more public transportation. I think that those are things, you know, those are values that people our age recognize because they're, you know, very eco-friendly and things like that. But, you know, I do think that, yeah, car companies need to do something to kind of adjust that curve. And this is a good way to get their brand in front of people because, as we know, you know, video games are identifying as a gamer and things like that. It is highly marketable. Those kind of identifiers are things that people really hold dear and hold staunchly to. So, you know, if you become the car company for gamers,
yep,
that's going to stick at least for a while.
That's what I thought Scion was supposed to be.
Well, I mean,
yeah, but then
the
you look
cars
at what a Scion
are hideous.
Looks like.
Yeah, exactly. Then you own a Scion.
Yeah. Tencent is feeling the pain as the continuing struggle to release games in China is eating away at their bottom line. Their net income fell 32% in quarter four. One bright spot for them is that they do anticipate their games will be releasing in China once again after the company churns through the massive
backlog.
But
this is also with the backdrop of just the Chinese economy in general.
The Chinese economy is sluggish.
Very well.
Yeah,
so
right.
This is sort of a double dip of bad news for Tencent, but if their games are being released, maybe they'll see a bounce back, but I think the whole economic situation in China will have to change for that.
Epic Games has announced a massive expansion to their Mega Grant program, which sees them give grants of between $5,000 and $500,000 to developers trying to get their game off the ground. While the initial grant pool was $5 million, the success of Fortnite has allowed them to expand that pool to $100 million. Grants will be no strings attached and will not require the developer to sign over any rights to the game or publishing thereof or exclusivity.
I have to say, I'm very impressed with the terms of this program. I mean, because most of the time when you get an investment that large from a company that big, there are strings attached. And
at least they're like, hey, you have to sell it on our store first. That's what I would have expected.
Exactly. And I think that the expectation is, you know, at the end of it, when the game comes to market, you know, you will look more favorably at the Epic store because
if they gave me $500,000 to help me get my game off the ground, I'm probably going to give their store the first crack at it.
And you know, to that end, I don't know that, you know, maybe Obsidian has gotten any money from Epic, but Obsidian did announce recently that The Outer Worlds was going to be an Epic storefront exclusive, which, you know, and again, I was very interested in Metro Exodus, got even hands-on with it out at E3 and loved what I saw, but it being
exclusively on
the Epic store, I did not pick it up, and I still have no intention on doing so.
That's all for the Checkpoint XP Gaming News Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Joe, for the update. Sony announced earlier this year that they would not be attending the E3 in 2019. Last year, they decided to skip running a PlayStation experience, and it left some people wondering, just when are we going to be seeing new updates out of the company?
Well, as it turns out, the answer is Monday.
Well, yeah, we don't know that there are going to be new updates. That's
fair. So
we frankly have no idea what this is.
Right, so Monday, March 25th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time will mark Sony's very first State of Play. The presentation will detail some new software set to come out for the PS4 and PSVR.
So this is basically their answer or their version of a Nintendo Direct.
Well, that's what it looks like to me. Yeah,
that's what it seems like.
Right down to how they like marketed it. Yeah, it looks like a Nintendo Direct for Sony. And I think as the tools to stream a conference like this become more and more ubiquitous and more accepted, my guess is this is the way of the future.
I have to wonder if this is going to incorporate any kind of live audience whatsoever. I mean, are they selling tickets to this? I haven't seen any.
No. Probably not.
And so I think that this may end up, you know, very directly mirroring, you know, Nintendo's Treehouse events.
You can't announce it on Friday and have a live audience on Monday, I don't think. Maybe you can. Maybe Sony's like, we can do whatever we want.
Well, maybe they can. Maybe they can fill an entire building with investors or interested parties. You never know. I mean, you know, Sony's done weirder stuff.
Yeah, but Treehouses in Nintendo Directs are usually pre-recorded stuff. This has probably already been done, and that's just when they're going to release it. But yeah. I think, you know, with stuff like this, it's cool, but Nintendo does a Direct or a Treehouse, and they still have a presence at E3. They have a mighty presence at E3.
What we have to realize is whatever this ends up being, since we know they're not going to be at E3, is that it for Sony announcements
is
for 2019?
No, well, I would if they're going to treat this like a Nintendo Direct, I would assume we'll see multiple a year.
Do we know what to expect at all in this showcase?
We got a tweet about it this morning. There's not much.
So what did the tweet say?
No, the tweet was announcing the event. What's happening and the start time.
I see.
It said here's the sum total of the information I saw on that tweet.
Okay.
The presentation will detail some new software set for PS4 and PSVR.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, new software, that's interesting.
Well, we have no indication that they're going to be announcing any kind of new hardware, nothing.
No, like, nothing.
It just seems like, okay.
Software. That says to me, these are the games coming out still in the spring.
I think that this is going to be the tail end of the PS4 library lineup before we see the announcement of the whatever the next hardware is going to be, whether it's the PS5 or some kind of other stopgap piece of hardware.
The balls on them if they name their next system something other than the PS5.
I mean,
maybe
it'd be insane. They're going to follow like everyone else. Like, all right, guys, this year you have the PlayStation. Nothing else. They're going back and just calling it the PlayStation.
Capital the.
Well, capital
THE.
If it's something that is modular or expandable over time, they may do that because they may consider that this is the system.
They can't even call it the PSX because they've already used that too.
You're right.
Ugh.
But I mean, I don't know, the what we call the PlayStation one was just simply called the PlayStation.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
So I don't know.
Colloquially,
yeah. I think anyone would all like. Even when I think about it, like when I refer to PS1, right there, PS1 games, right?
Yeah. Like they should take a shot at Xbox and call it like the PlayStation Python.
Totally,
the Anaconda,
the PlayStation Serpico. Yeah.
is there a snake that eats other snakes? That would be
probably.
That would pythons.
Do they? I was going to say that.
PlayStation Cobra.
That would be mighty aggressive. All right. Well, listen. We want to hear from you. What do you think that this event is going to end up being? Do you think that this is a smart move on Sony's part? Are you going to be watching? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Ahead next, voting for the Checkpoint XP High Score Hall of Fame is currently underway over at our website at checkpointxp.com. But the Video Game Hall of Fame has also announced its contenders for induction in 2019. We'll break them down ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on affiliate station WXSM Tri-Cities, Tennessee, as well as ESPN Phoenix 620. Checkpoint XP Daily is now a part of the Bpod Network at bpodstudios.com. For more great listening options, like If You Give a Rick a podcast for kids about the world of children's books, and Nerd Radio for everything from sci-fi to wrestling to all things nerdy in between, go to bpodstudios.com. The place place to be for podcast discovery. Every year, the Video Game Hall of Fame in Rochester, New York releases its list of nominees. In years past, we've seen things like Final Fantasy VII, Oregon Trail, and Doom get elected. So let's dive into this year's nominees. Now, this is a segment that we do every single year. And every year I go, why? Why are we doing this?
It's tradition. It ties in with us doing the High Score Hall of Fame.
Because
our Hall of Fame is clearly better than theirs.
That's called convergence, Nate.
That's what I'm saying. We're reporting on the competition for our own Hall of Fame.
Right.
It's confusing.
So the three games that get the most votes from the online poll will be entered on a ballot and join the
That sounds familiar.
Right. And they'll be entered on the ballots along with 27 other game journalists from around the world to determine the final winners, who will be inducted on May 2nd.
I'm sorry.
Why
listen.
Are we not on that list?
Yeah, let's make
that is the question.
Why not make it an even 30?
Yeah.
Well, it's because you get the three that are voted on by the people plus 27 for 30.
That said,
why of those 27, are we not one of those 27? That is the question that needs to be asked.
No,
right
just
here.
Include Criminal. More and just let us vote.
Yeah, you're right.
Give us a pity vote.
Let's go four from the people and then us four. That makes 35.
That's
I like
right.
That.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So here are the games that are up for consideration this year. First of all, Candy Crush.
God, what? What?
Yeah.
What?
I know.
Nah, you'd be ridiculous not to put it on that list.
That's stupid.
Do you know how many people play Candy Crush?
I don't care.
See, Norris, I'm going to give you that point, but on a later one that's on this list. I think Candy Crush. I don't like that one on here.
Yeah, Candy Crush, come on.
There have been tons of games that millions of people have played. That alone shouldn't get it in.
Boo.
Number two.
No.
Boo.
Centipede.
Yep.
Fine.
Yeah, right. I think Centipede is reasonable. Someone's going to have to fill me in on number three because I've never heard of Colossal Cave Adventure. What is that?
That sounds like something. Well, first
I'm
of all,
out.
Did you not do your research here, Joe?
No, I did not spend my day looking up Colossal
Cave
Adventure.
Robbie's just now doing his.
Yeah, well, sure. Since he's just now doing his, what is it, Robbie? Tell me all about
pretty
it.
Pretty sure, because I've heard of Cave Adventure. That's one of the earlier ones that was on, like, the...
I've heard of Pitfall and Super
right?
Pitfall and
yeah,
Cave
I know,
Story.
I know
those
Pitfall.
Games.
Oh, Cave Story. That might be what I'm thinking of. But here we go. Colossal Cave Adventure.
Yeah.
It's a simulation game
oh,
from...
Good.
on Google Play.
So, oh, good.
So, nope.
A Google Play title
no,
made
no,
it.
No,
it
no,
was,
no, it was developed back in 77, 1975.
Yeah. Okay, there we go.
Well, I'm going to lean on
PDP
no because...
PDP 10 mainframe.
I'm going to go on no because I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, I think that should
it's
automatically...
It's a text
score.
Game.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Exactly.
No. It's a text adventure
text
game.
Text adventure, okay.
Do better, Video Game Hall of Fame.
Next. I'll accept MUDs because MUDs...
Sure.
Like, MUDs were kind of like the very first logical... underpinnings because, you know, the internet mostly functioned off of sending very, very small data packets.
So when you say MUDs, are you referring to like those games where like you'd get like a point every so many hours and you could use them to like enact certain commands?
No, like a MUD was like what even predated an MMO where you would have multiple people doing a text adventure style game.
Yep, okay.
And I'll accept that as
kind of like Twitch Plays Pokemon, but not as complicated.
Yeah. And I'll accept that as a entry into video game history, but man, that I don't know about that.
Dance Dance Revolution.
Yes.
I'm fine with
yes.
that one.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue that.
Half-Life.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Totally.
Right,
absolutely.
Now, Norris, this is the one that I said I would give you. Microsoft Windows Solitaire.
Yes.
What?
The
yes.
most
what?
Played game
yes.
in history,
yes.
maybe.
The most played game in probably in history.
But
what is the install base of Solitaire?
But it's just
every
it's
Microsoft
not even but it's
Windows
not even
computer
it's not
ever.
Even a new game or like an original design. It's just the card game on the computer.
It doesn't matter.
I think it actually does.
Well, you
it
know
doesn't
what?
Matter.
Better put poker in there too then.
Yeah, what about the pinball game that came with a lot of Windows machines?
That wasn't as good as Solitaire.
Space
that
pinball?
That might already be in there.
Space Pinball 3D.
I played the
very
heck
well
out of Space Pinball.
Oh my god, Space Pinball 3D. I played that way more.
Minesweeper.
Minesweeper.
I think Minesweeper might
is
be in there. Up next is Mortal Kombat.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Myst?
I'm not gonna.
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, totally. Myst, Riven. I mean, I played a lot
yeah,
of that.
Totally. NBA 2K.
No.
What?
No.
Wouldn't NBA Jam be a better
Yes, absolutely. You want to talk
NBA Jam.
Like NBA? Everyone played NBA Jam, whether you liked basketball or not, because it was just a great goofy game.
Yeah.
NBA Jam before all of it.
Norris, I'm curious in your take on this one. Sid Meier's Civilization.
Yeah,
Civ 1.
Yeah. Only because here's why I say that. Only because a lot of times with Hall of Fame stuff, it's about the foundational content. So
okay.
I think you have to put Civ in there because without it, there's a lot of.
You're suggesting that's why Mortal Kombat 1 is in there instead of Mortal Kombat 3 Ultimate, right, which is better.
Right.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on 107.7 The Franchise in Oklahoma City and 107.9 The Franchise in Tulsa. We're currently going through the list of nominees for the Video Game Hall of Fame. And
we're okay with about half of them.
Yeah. Well, we got a few more yet.
We still got a few more. We've been okay with, a little more than half.
Yeah.
Up next, Super Mario Kart.
No brainer.
Of course. No, how is brainer. That not? I don't understand no how brainer. That's not in there already.
Again, I understand why it's Super Mario Kart and not Mario Kart 64.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought Mario Kart 64 was way better.
Of course. It's not about what's better.
It's about their influence.
Yeah.
Okay.
All okay, right. But then kind of explain the last one.
Yeah, because here comes the last one. Super Smash Brothers Melee.
Influence on esports.
Melee. Though.
Melee's more influential than the
yeah,
first
but
Smash
if
Brothers.
But if we're going by all of the other arguments that you've made for, you know, like Mortal Kombat 1
this isn't
Sid Meier's Civilization 1.
This isn't its influence on gaming. It's its influence on esports,
right.
Which did not happen
that's
until
what I'm saying.
Melee, and didn't happen again with Brawl because they stayed with Melee, or 4 because they stayed with Melee, or the Wii U because they stayed with Melee.
You know, Robbie is 100% right, bro.
But if it's foundational influence that we're going on.
No, you didn't listen to what he said.
I heard exactly what he said, but it doesn't line up with your other arguments.
Because none of these things had impacts on esports. Melee did.
Why is the Video Game Hall of Fame judging off of impact on esports?
Because it's still,
that's
video,
still
games.
Video games.
I don't. I think you're reaching.
For that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're absolutely reaching.
Okay, and if we did, take Melee out of that one, put it in the Esports Hall of Fame. But we don't have that. So
it should have been Super Smash Brothers. It should have been the N64.
I'd put them both in there.
If we're following your logic, then it's the original Super Smash Brothers. All right, listen, we got to leave the discussion right there. But we want to hear from you. Do you agree with the list of this year's inductees? Or potential inductees. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website at checkpointxp.com for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a full archive of podcasts and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Thanks to our executive producing team of Buzz Knight, Mike Thomas, and Rick Scott. And today is actually Rick Scott's very last day with us.
Thank you, Rick, for being
our visionary in the early days of this show, and for welcoming us into the radio industry. None of this would have been possible without your leadership and your influence. So thank you so much. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Producing and booking help from Christine Solis. And of course, my co-hosts who pull double duties as producers for Checkpoint XP. Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's A. Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com.
StageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.